Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me. I know you must have a very busy schedule, and I really, really appreciate this. I can give you a little rundown on what this article is about, a little bit about me, and then I can just dive into some questions that I have about you and about
your
political work. Okay, so my name's Vidhi. I'm a sophomore at UC Berkeley, double majoring in political science and economics with a minor in public policy, hoping to go to law school someday. And I am one of the senior writers at Berkeley Political Review, which basically writes, it's the largest magazine on campus that writes across the board articles on basically anything. I'm part of the online team, so I do a lot of multimedia stuff, so interviews as well as articles on whatever is current in the world right now. So this article specifically is about South Asian representation in American politics, specifically more progressive South Asian representation, and kind of contrasting that with the more conservative right-wing parties that are up or that are in power in India itself, and how South Asians in America are gravitating more towards progressive ideals and progressive parties.
Okay.
So
that sounds good.
Okay, so I know that you were running a campaign in New York 12. How did you get involved? How did you start your political career?
Well, I mean, I kind of grew up in a really, I'll say, a traditional sort of immigrant, first-generation immigrant household, which is the most non-traditional upbringing in America, I think. When it comes from, you know, the South Asian perspective, at least, my parents came in the late 60s, early 70s, United States. We bounced around New Jersey, Mississippi, Indiana, New York, all over the country, looking for economic security and then eventually economic success. So I kind of grew up doing, you know, growing with the family's business and big extended Indian family in the middle of the Midwest. And, you know, I gravitated towards politics at an early age because of how important representation is when you were growing up sort of very different looking and sounding and eating from all the people around you.
Yes.
And you see something where, you know, people are, your peers are selecting you to represent them. There's something very sort of personally, and I'd say like affirming about it, you know? And so, you know, I was always interested in that and government and public policy as a force for good. I went to Stanford undergrad, rival, and majored in political science and was very interested in American politics. I came to New York City for law school.
Okay.
And during law school in 2008, I went to NYU Law. And during law school in 2008, I became just completely enamored with the Obama campaign and what it represented. Barack Obama, in a personal way, represents a lot of the things that I just told you about growing up, you know, growing up looking and sounding different in a place than you are, and, you know, really taking advantage of academics and education and opportunity to build something yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see a campaign that was uniting and ideas driven and inspirational. I wanted to see that succeed. So I left law school to, can you give me one sec? Sorry.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So I left law school in 2008 to join the Obama campaign full time, dropped everything, much to my parents' dismay.
Wow.
And ended up working for the president across the country and across the world over the next 8 years, off and on in different capacities, including doing advance for the White House.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to see firsthand how a campaign that's inspiring, that's uplifting, that brings people in versus divides them is the kind of campaign I wanted to see. So fast forward to 2016, Trump gets elected. Everybody is looking for what's my purpose here? What am I supposed to do to help right this country? How do we get here, et cetera? And I, you know, helped organize candidates and campaigns across the country to run against Republicans. But I realized even in my own district in New York City, only 7% of people are voting because they're so tired of these politicians and politics that even the Democratic Party. And I felt very underrepresented. I'd never seen my congressperson in the 12 years I lived in my district. the congressperson takes more corporate PAC money than almost any Republican. And by and large, is occupying a seat that could be leading boldly with policy and ideas, and instead is just sitting there in it, occupying it. So I decided to run for office, and the rest is history, as I said.
How did you, most Indian Americans vote kind of left of center, vote Democrat and things like that, but how did you gravitate, would you say you gravitated towards progressivism after working on the Obama campaign, or was that just something in you while growing up?
I think that, I would still consider myself, I'm a progressive and I'm an Obama progressive, it's hard to, these definitions shift and evolve over time, but when 2008 was happening and Obama was running against Hillary Clinton, we were the progressives. We were the anti-war campaign, and in that regard, we were the progressive campaign. And I still believe that that's where I sit,
Yeah.
But I think you also operate within the times. I'm a huge, when Obama tried to push a public option through during Obamacare, it was the political times that, forced us, and Joe Lieberman, frankly, to force us to not do it. So, I mean, I'd say that I'm a progressive, but I also have run a business. I teach at NYU Business School. I wouldn't consider myself a socialist.
Okay.
And, but there's still a big tent here,
Right, right. Would you say that, or how do you think that the BJP in India and the rise of the right has affected a lot of Indian Americans in politics in the US, or do you think they're very separate and don't really have an effect on each other?
I think separate. I'll be honest with you, I get asked this more often than no constituent has ever asked me about it. That's for sure. Zero in 3 years I've run for office. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, people, want to make that linkage and want to ask about India and all that. But I think that the rise of nationalism is not just relegated to the United States with Donald Trump and his cultural faction, nor is it relegated to Turkey and Erdogan and Modi. This is a phenomenon that is existing across the world, thanks to, I think, propelled in large by social media and echo chambers and just a fear and anxiety that's out there. So I'm concerned, generally speaking, across the world about, and especially in our country, here in the United States, about the rise of nativist and nationalist forces. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does. I'm asking.
And I think that the
Go ahead.
And I think that the means by which those movements come to power are what link them together, which is social media, which is fragmentation in the media ecosystem, different news consumption, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I would say I'm asking because I'm taking a South Asian politics class right now, and we're learning a lot about why the rise of the right actually happened, why the BJP is in power. And I know older members of my family gravitate more towards that than they do towards more progressive ideals. So I was wondering if that was a similar thing that you had to deal with, that kind of while you
were— There's no doubt that we get older. I think there's a generational divide, just like there is in our country, within our own families. I feel like I talk to more of my parents' friends that are sympathetic to, BJP politics or whatever than anyone our age would be, by and large. But I think that's also a function— I'm going to be charitable here in a sense that I think it's some of that's a function of just the economic reform side of it. I think our parents' generation lived in India, lived through an India that wasn't very economically fair or free,
right,
as it was sort of, and anemic growth. So I think when they are like pro— I don't know, I'm speculating, but I think when a lot of people are pro sort of Modi or pro BJP that are in our parents' generation, it's coming from a completely different place than why we may find that stuff problematic. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I think that says a lot about conservatives across the world as well. It's a lot about different ideals, different things growing up, different ways of life.
Yeah, and I would say there's no— I don't want to be that charitable about conservatives here, because that's not the same. There are no parallels. We did not go through a phase of anemic, you know, growth and markets that were fettered and all that kind of stuff in the United States. So I think that that's different, personally, you know?
Right. And I know that you hosted, moving on from India versus the U.S. kind of, I know you've recently co-hosted South Asian Block Party with a bunch of Indian American comedians, and a lot of comedians have been supporting the progressive movement. Do you think that's good to kind of empower the younger generation to get more votes? What are your views on that?
Yeah, of course. I think it's very important just generally to get people empowered to feel like they have a voice, to be voting, to get involved in what is probably the most consequential election of our lifetimes. You know, it is the most consequential election of our lifetimes.
Yeah.
So I think that anything and all hands on deck on making sure that people know to vote, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be surprised at how many people still don't feel like it's important. So we're going to, you know, not leave any stone unturned.
Mm-hmm. And kind of going off of that, how do you feel about the representation of South Asians in American politics? Do you think it's very well represented? There's room for growth, or
no?
Find the way it is.
I think it's awfully represented. I think there's massive room for growth. I think that applies to not just South Asians, but all Asians, Asian Americans, frankly, all groups that are underrepresented, which is pretty much everyone in American politics. That's women, that's people of color, that's, you know, Asian Americans, that's Hispanic Americans, that's Black Americans. With regard to my specific experience as a South Asian, note that in New York, of all states in the country, we don't have a single South Asian member of Congress. And until this year, we don't have any people even in the state legislature.
Right.
Until this year, we have our first Indian American person elected in the state legislature. We don't, out of 63 city council people in the city of New York, the most diverse city in the world, we don't have a single South Asian in office. Can you believe that? So there's a representation problem, significant one. I think it's tied to the media as well, because I think that we occupy a weird place that doesn't fit neatly into a box for the current sort of, let's call it, progressive versus establishment Democrat, and then Democrat versus Republican. Those two axes by which you see sort of camps and neat coverage, we don't fit in there as a group. We don't fit in there as a group for a lot of reasons. We're not big, we're relatively new to the country, mm-hmm. high levels of economic and educational achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people just don't know what the hell to do with us and how to report on us. And it's unfortunate and disconcerting to me. I think that treatment is brutal, but it's contributed to a severe underrepresentation.
Right. And then, again, extrapolating off of this, Kamala Harris's nomination by a lot of people has been viewed as tokenism, and just kind of as tokenism. Do you have any thoughts on that? How do you feel about that?
Sorry,
I was saying that a lot of people think that Kamala Harris's nomination, it can be viewed as tokenism on the Democratic.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
No, I don't agree with that at all. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that it's absurd. Tokenism is, I think that you've got here a person who has worked their way through the politics of one of the hardest states to be in politics.
Right.
Go from a DA to an attorney general to a U.S. senator on her own accord, and then on her own accord be nominated to be the vice presidential candidate for a candidate, you know, that is looking to be heavily leaning on their vice president. And what about that tokenism? That doesn't make any sense. You know, that's all on her own accord, and I think that she deserves it, and I think we deserve someone like that.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And then I guess my last question is, and how do you kind of see the future of South Asian representation, or even minority representation in general in politics, in your own career, as well as the generation that's coming, I guess my aged people, I guess.
I think we're about to push through in the next few cycles. Mm-hmm. A record number, well, anything is a record number right now, of South Asians and people as the country emerging sort of multiracial coalition emerges. And it's not going to be easy. Nothing in politics is given. And I will tell you this as a person who's a bold progressive Democrat who's worked for Democrats his whole life. Mm-hmm. When you challenge an establishment Democrat, their behavior sometimes is significantly worse than Republicans. There is no difference. Power doesn't give up easily.
Right.
And we as progressives and we as people of color and we as South Asians better not expect anyone to hand to us the reins anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to fight tooth and nail for it. And that's okay because that's just what it is. That's the reality of it. Mm-hmm. But it behooves us to do it, you know?
Right.
And so I think it's going to take challenging. I think it's going to take place, you know, when people in California and safe Democratic districts retire, it's not like someone's going to approach you and say, oh, hey, you should consider running for office because you're South Asian, we don't have enough representatives. You have to bang down the door and do it. And if someone's not retiring, if they become ineffective like Carolyn Maloney, mm-hmm. and they're still not retiring, then you have an obligation to go challenge them.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've learned so much. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you just so much for this.
You got it. I appreciate it. Reach out whenever.
Thank you.
Stay tuned.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye.